welcome to another edition of Community Tides with yours truly, Chris Bricker, and co-host Siobhan Canty, President and CEO of Jefferson Community Foundation. On alternate Fridays at noon, we get together to talk about new developments, new paradigms, and the challenging new normal facing Jefferson County. As we roll along with the vaccines and the variants through the rest of 2021. Hi, Siobhan.
Hi, Chris. Great to be with you again today.
As always. Well, we have a special guest today. Linda Rosenberry was a New York City principal for 10 years, transforming and founding schools in both the district and charter sectors. She has piloted and improved programs that have increased students' academic and social emotional skills and improved teacher recruitment and retention in schools across the country. At age 28, she became the principal of a middle school, still recovering from being named one of the 12 most violent schools in New York City. Her efforts have evidently and eventually led to a safe and supportive environment focused on academics. She's developed staff wellness workshops for teachers in El Salvador and contributed two books, Mindful Schools, Transforming School Culture Through Mindfulness and Compassion, and Common Sense Evidence, The Education Leader's Guide to Using Data and Research. In May, she earned a doctorate in education in leadership from Harvard University. She became Port Townsend School District Superintendent in July. In this role, she supervises the principals of the town's four public schools and works with the board to ensure academic and social and emotional growth for all students. Linda Rosenberry, it's an honor to have you as a guest on KPTZ's Community Tides.
Thank you, Chris. I'm happy to be here.
All right. Well, we all have a good connection, and that's wonderful.
I'm so excited you're here. I want to ask first, do you prefer to be called Dr. Rosenberry, or may we call you Linda?
Linda is good. Thank you, Siobhan.
Well, it's great that you're here, and thank you so much. And I think our community, it's just exciting to get a chance to start to get to know you broadly. And welcome to Jefferson County and to Port Townsend. We're so excited for your leadership here and to just start to learn a little bit about what you're hoping for this year. And I know a lot of people have questions about the pandemic and where things stand, but let's not go there quite yet. Let's start from a place of just getting to know your leadership style a little bit and kind of what can teachers, administrators, parents, and the broader community expect from Dr. Linda Rosenberry as you take over the helm there?
Thanks for that question, Siobhan. I think people can expect that I'm going to integrate into the community. I chose Port Townsend because of its size. I feel like I can know people really deeply and they can know me. So I want to be visible, learning people's, not just their names and who they are, but also what are their hopes and dreams for their children. So as I move about, especially this year, it's really a year of listening and learning. But I will have to take action on a lot of things. You mentioned the pandemic. So I hope people will see that I'm also doing what it takes to make sure we open schools safely and that all students can return and really enjoy their in-person learning this coming year. I like to be responsive, so if people drop me an email or want to meet up, I'm happy to meet up with them. I also really think of schools as part of democracy. So the schools, I might be the leader of the school, but the schools belong to the citizens. We support the schools. And so I want to create committees where students, families, staff, and community members come together and look at what we know about our schools and what our students need and come together to find solutions and set a vision. So I hope that the community members, as they learn me over the next year, see that it's not a top-down hierarchical approach, but instead I really want to create space for people to share ideas and have a collective understanding and vision of where we want to go together.
And Linda, you have your background is in the inner city, And I was wondering what comparisons and contrasts you can make from what you encounter here in Port Townsend compared to what you encountered and some of the things that you accomplished in New York City.
Yes, I definitely have been a principal in a different environment in New York City. And to be fully transparent, when I got the job in Port Townsend, I was so excited. And then my first visit to Salish Coast, it was so beautiful. The brand new building the community created, the kids looked so happy. They had so much space. And I thought, oh no, do I know how to be an education leader in this environment? Because I'm so used to cramped buildings in New York City and crumbling infrastructure. And in New York City, it feels like sometimes the schools get kind of lost in the shuffle and children are not at the center of the community. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons I wanted to come to Port Townsend was that children are at the center, and football games, our first one September 3rd, it's like the main event in town. And people really rally around the schools, support the schools. Children are visible and known. And I came across that revelation when I was cleaning out my parents' basement a couple years ago. And from my own upbringing in Sioux City, Iowa, a smaller town, I found all of the programs for musicals and plays I'd been in, and these posters of me on the girls' soccer team that were plastered all over town. And I thought about how different my childhood was from the childhood that I was seeing in New York City. And I thought, I really want to get back to a place where children are the center and they're not lost in the shuffle. So that's a major difference in that kind of tone. I also think here in Port Townsend, community leaders are all very accessible and excited to collaborate on behalf of children and to help children. In New York City, the focus seemed to be more on commerce, the financial system. It just didn't feel like the community leaders had the time and energy and willingness to sit around a table and talk about how do we make sure children are supported in every facet of their life. So those are some of the major differences I'm seeing so far. Also, I don't have to wear high heels anymore, it seems. So that was another exciting development, because in New York City, it was kind of expected for female leaders. And here, the first couple times I walked around town in high heels, I was like, wait a minute, that's not needed.
I think the typical transition is to keep a hold on those high heels for about a year before you donate them to Goodwill or some other place. I just feel like your words are like water while crossing a desert, really, Linda, because there's such a strong desire to support our young people here. And it's so complicated as we see housing prices rise and working families moving out of the community and so many opportunities like the old bowling alley or boiler room or, you know, spaces where young people not only could go, but they really kind of set the agenda for those spaces. And I think you're absolutely right. You have a community here, including some nonprofit partners, government partners, who are all very willing and ready to help engage with your vision of putting children at the center. So I just wanted to say that it's, I love that vision so much. I do have a quick question about, I also love the idea of schools as an expression of democracy. And, you know, we're in such a complex environment in terms of information and how information gets shared. And I mean, how do you think about that as an educator in terms of our young people and how you kind of make them like digital literacy, scrutiny of information, ability to kind of research? Is that all integrated in your vision of where you're going to take the schools?
Yes. So I know the work has been ongoing, already underway in our classrooms here in Port Townsend, where we're making sure that students know how to navigate the digital world and that they are critical consumers who think about the author's perspective and seek out other information. When they look at websites, they're not just taking the information as fact, but kind of trying to dig deeper about who created this website, when was it last updated? What do other people say? I think that it's not just the digital world, but it's also in the books that we read and what type of perspectives are we putting in kids' hands. I was so impressed when I walked into the library of our schools, the different displays of books from all different cultures and perspectives. And I know that in Port Townsend, we love being a small town and we love exposing our students to the whole globe of perspectives. And so it does feel like that is a key to supporting democracy, that kids see outside themselves and do have those skills of comparing where the sources that they're getting information from.
Linda, there's a different, well, there's diversity here in this, well, there's diversity here in Jefferson County that is addressed economically and socioeconomic concerns and all the rest of it. We don't necessarily have the diversity that New York City has. But I'm curious, from the point of view of your attitude towards excellence in teaching and how to accomplish that. I know that there were some roadblocks in New York City. There was a state Supreme Court decision that was turning down the refusal the Dear John, what do you call those the goodbye letters that went to some of the teachers that were performing with less than competent skills. And I know that your approach was to, once that decision came down, that those teachers had to stay, that I know that your approach was trying to uplift them and get them to get better at performance as best as you could. And full disclosure, you're talking to a former union organizer here, so I'm very, very curious about how you related to the union in those circumstances.
Yeah, those are good questions. And to frame for our listeners a little bit of that context in New York City, it was that I was the principal of two different schools, and the first school was a traditional district school with the New York City Teachers Union, and we were considered a failing school as per our test scores. We did make some progress initially, but it wasn't enough, so we were on the state list, and that made us eligible for federal funding that required a school turnaround model where all of the teachers would be interviewed. And the committee, which included the union, would decide which teachers would stay and which would leave. And so I did go through that process, and then all those decisions were overturned, and teachers who the committee said weren't coming back the next year did come back. And so it was very challenging as a leader in that context. And I do believe that every teacher enters the profession because they care about kids. And in New York City in particular, the school I took over, I was the 11th principal for some people. And as you mentioned in my bio, it was one of the 12 most violent schools in New York City with rapes and armed robberies in the building. And there were shootings during the school day in our playground. And I had a pregnant teacher have to drop to the ground at 8 a.m. So I paint this picture to describe how I understand if a teacher lost their flame and were just holding on in that building. So when I entered in, there was a lot of work around culture and helping teachers reignite the flame of why they entered the profession. So I'm obviously in a very different situation here in Port Townsend, and I'm excited to begin the collaborations with the Port Townsend Educators Association. That's our teachers union and counselors. And then we have our classified union, SEIU, for paraeducators, bus drivers, food service. I myself was a delegate to the New York City Teachers Union when Randy Weingarten was at the helm. She's now the head of the National Education Association. So I believe strongly that teachers need to have a voice in how schools are run, and not just teachers. We have expanded our August orientations to include bus drivers, food service workers. Every single adult who's employed by the school system touches children's lives, and we want them to be at the table when we're assessing what's going on and how we can make a more positive impact. That being said, I think there's going to be a lot of tension over the next few years just across the country, especially with COVID. I know we weren't going to talk about that yet, so I'll pause on that. But if you have any follow-up questions about the labor relations, I'm happy to answer them, Chris.
No, I think that one of the things that we've confronted with test scores is that there was the term, there was no child left behind, but then there was also the term no child's behind left. And I just would like your comment on how test scores fit into the big picture of evaluating students?
Mm-hmm. So in the state of Washington, we have the Smarter Balanced Assessment, and it gives a rough idea of how kids are doing on that day. It's kind of a snapshot. So I would never take a single test score of a student as a factor of whether or not they are a strong student. We always want to triangulate the data. So look at the test score, look at the work the student's producing in class. We also have a lot of great internal assessments in our schools that teachers administer that give a sense of where students are at. But I'm not a person who says test scores don't matter, because test scores sometimes tell us that a student doesn't have basic skills. So I'm not going to push for a student to get the top score on the state test. But if they're scoring a level one, which is in New York City, it was level one, two, three, four. If they're scoring a level one on the literacy assessment, it probably means they can't write an email. They can't read the paper. If they're scoring a level one on a math assessment, it probably means they can't understand their phone bill. They wouldn't be able to do basic math when they're at the grocery store. So I think that test scores can give us information. They're a very blunt instrument, so they shouldn't be used for making high-stakes decisions without taking into account lots of other information.
So let's do talk about the pandemic for a couple of minutes. I love your skill set on kind of keeping the flame alive for teachers, and certainly teachers have had a rough time the last couple of years. So I'm talking about not just physical safety, but mental health. You know, how are you navigating? What are the current parameters in which you have to operate? If you could just give us a quick kind of 2-minute rundown of that would be great.
Yeah. Well, first I want to reiterate how much adult wellness is important right now. And so when we're talking about our entry back in August, we want to check in with our adults. There's been a lot of trauma, and some of it's secondary trauma, things that we've seen other people go through, and some of it's personal trauma in the past year and a half, not just related to the pandemic, but also racial unrest and other factors like the fires that we're seeing here. So I want to make sure all of our adults, they feel good coming back to work, and they feel like there's a support network, and they have permission to take care of themselves when they need to. There has been some stress created recently by the Delta variant. It's not looking good right now. The transmission rates are high in our county, and kids are also getting COVID with this Delta variant. So we are on overdrive right now, I would say, making sure that we have the appropriate mitigation strategies in our schools to keep kids in class 5 days a week in person. So unlike last year, where we didn't know much about COVID, and out of an abundance of caution, we were closing classrooms, putting the whole school to remote. That is not the vision for this year. We have a lot more science that tells us how the things are transmitted, how the virus is transmitted, and also that the mental health impacts of students not being in school in person. So our number one goal this year is to consistently have kids in class 5 days a week in person. That being said, we have remote options for families who want them, and we have the OCEAN program, which is a blend of in-class and experiential. But most kids in Port Townsend will be in class 5 days a week in person, and we are striving not to disrupt that. And here's how. There's masking, rapid antigen testing, vaccination, and hand-washing ventilation. So I'll start with the vaccination, which has been all over the news this week, because Governor Inslee announced that all school employees must be vaccinated or receive a religious or medical exemption by October 18th. And so we believe that over 90% of our staff is vaccinated already, so it won't be a deal for most of our employees, but some are still on the fence, and this hopefully will help them decide if they're eligible to get a vaccination. They might get an exemption, and so we can say with confidence that all of the adults in our buildings working with children, especially our youngest ones who can't be vaccinated, that they are vaccinated. We're also verifying the vaccination status of students 12 and above who are eligible, because we need to know which protocols to follow. And we're hoping that by the end of this fall, students under 12 have the opportunity to be vaccinated.
So Linda, we're going to have to sign off here, but I hope this is the beginning of many conversations, and consider this community at your service as you pursue your vision for our children. We're so glad you're here.
Thanks, Linda. There's lots more to talk about. Thanks for joining us on Community Tides. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.